Good evening and welcome to another roadcast. Interesting. I'm still in Dara. It's the 1st of June and I'm out for an evening stroll. It's dusk. And the interesting thing is, I was cutting through a ginnel, if you like, or a walkway, as they're often more commonly known as, a thoroughfare. And there's this guy cycling towards me. And as soon as he got within about 2 metres, I instantly recognised him as another friend of mine, Andrew. And I hadn't seen this guy for 30 years. So I called his name, which was obviously a bit of a surprise to him when he stopped, and came over, and we got on famously. It was as if the 30 years or so were completely irrelevant. Maybe because, I'm not saying that is the case, but, you know, in that instant, there was a reconnection. And I mention it because I had a similar experience last night. I went to see a friend of mine called Howard, who I haven't seen for about 7 or 8 years. And similarly, you know, this is the thing about friendship. It doesn't really matter how many years have passed. If someone has that bond with you, that bond of friendship, then you can quite often just pick things up as and when you left them. And, you know, I'm still traveling. I do rather enjoy experiences like that. An entity that doesn't lose in a war is a bank, but notwithstanding that fact, it seems pretty obvious to me now that the First and Second World Wars were slaughterhouses. Whether or not it was a ritualistic, satanic slaughter of the indigenous men, one that took out millions of young European men in their prime. Maybe not, in fact, a lot of them were younger than their prime, you know. They were fucking misled. They were duped into believing the lie that it is honourable to die for one's country. Absolute horseshit when you realise that the country is, of course, nothing less than a corporation in nature. A corporation whose aim is to make money. It's run for profit. Now, if we couple onto that the likelihood that there was some kind of, possibly some kind of satanic, ritualistic aspect to it all, and given the nature, the psychological psychopathy at play in bankers and financiers of all manner and descriptions, that wouldn't surprise me. You know, a psychopathic individual is going to be drawn to anything that gives him power over others, even if that power is imaginary, even if it's through a fake religion, which of course is what we're dealing with here. Banking is a cult, it's a fake religion. People believe, unquestioningly, as an act of blind faith, in this God known as the One Eye, the Mon Eye, the money. The bankers are effectively the priests of this, priests of high finance, psychopathy and banksters. I think the two go hand in hand. Otherwise, how do you explain the genocidal attacks that are taking place every day in every court in Britain that's hearing a possession claim, a bogus possession claim, by a lying lawyer representing a fraudulent operation, which in any event, in all probability, has fucking securitised the mortgage anyway. He's not the holder of the mortgage. It's been sold on. As the astute listener can check out if he goes to a link in that article to the Santander case in Northern Ireland, where a barrister lied and said that someone's mortgage had not been securitised, when in fact the man provided proof that it had. You see, these judges who are presiding, they're often district judges, I've really got to fucking wake up, because otherwise, you know, the longer this goes on, the more liabilities they're creating for themselves. It's almost like they're assigning their own death warrants. I mean, these guys are going to become dinosaurs. They're going to go the way of dinosaurs, particularly when the people begin to truly understand the power that they have when it comes to forming a grand jury. Grand jury of the people is the highest power, the highest authority in the land. Every court, every bogus institution operating as a court is subject to a grand jury. Now, a grand jury can be between 13 and 25 individuals. In this case, it's likely to need 13 to 25 sovereign individuals because of the inequitous removal of grand juries, and there's a link to that article as well, in Britain. And of course, anyone who's operating as a citizen is whether or not they like it, operating under those statutes. Those statutes will be the ones that the court apply. So, you know, say there was 13 citizens who got together to form a grand jury, the very fact that they were citizens will preclude them from doing that, because under in the jurisdiction of the United Kingdom's phony Rothschild Crown owned, bought and paid for courts and tribunal service, that's all that counts. It's the legalese, and it's the world of fiction. Now, 13 sovereign individuals are clearly not bound by any fake act of Parliament, because they're no longer citizens of the corporation known as the United Kingdom. And therefore, that gives them the ability to step outside of all that and create a grand jury foreign on behalf of the people. And as soon as that grand jury is formed, there will be no higher authority in the land. Now, some people are talking about the formation of common law courts, and I'm guessing that those will be common law courts formed under citizenship. Now, whilst I'm all in favour of as many individuals taking action and, you know, having a go at the phony state, I think some actions are a little bit misguided, shall we say. Because the grand jury is the solution. The problem, remember, is the genocide of financial skullduggery, particularly the Great British Mortgage Swindle. There's nothing more pernicious than that, surely. To remove someone from that, to forcibly remove someone from their home over a fake death, it would be hard to imagine, you know, and all the psychological, all the mental harm, the physical loss that's caused as a result of that. It would be hard to imagine something more pernicious. So I say that without a hint of exaggeration. It's self-evident that a grand jury is not subject to any phony statutes. It's the people. It's above and beyond the Parliament. Get that in your noodle, folks. It's above and beyond the Parliament. And this is where we're at right now. We need to put aside our differences and unite against the enemy. And who is the enemy? Well, the enemy is anyone who is acting against you in a way that could be deemed genocidal. Acting in a way that you would reasonably come to believe was seeking to wipe you out, to wipe people out. So when that realization dawns, as it surely will, on more and more people, things in this country are going to begin to change in most exciting and beneficial and wonderful ways for many. This is the remedy. This is all it takes. As I say, the problem is the genocidal actions of the banks in the great mortgage swindle. The reaction is a sense of palpable outrage, and the way that individuals have deepened their understanding of this. In other words, the information is out there, and such are the levels of curiosity amongst the people. And natural intelligence, which is often buried underneath heaps and heaps of state-sponsored propaganda, as soon as the people begin to get wind of this in sufficient numbers, then that's it, it's game up. It's game over for these fuckers. The EU can be fucked off. Fraudulent communist status structure that it is. Bye bye. The entire mortgage swindle will end. And all those who've been perpetrating these acts of genocide against the people, the individuals in my case known as David Koresh, who's the head bailiff at Nottingham County Court, a genocidal maniac, a criminal who is still at large, and His Honour Richard Dickie English, the man who claimed that there was no merit in my counterclaim against the Bradford and Bingley. Oh dear, Dickie. Oh dear, oh dear. However, I'm not naive enough to waste my sympathy on these people. They were warned, and they carried on regardless. Just like the usurper Kerry Howells, who bought my house at a fire sale price, an associate. I'm not saying I knew him as a friend, but I did know him by way of a mutual friend. And he went behind my back and bought the house at a fire sale price, some 58,000 less than the actual value of the place. Now that to me is a cuntish thing to do. But he knows, because he was notified, there were notices all over the front of the house saying buyer beware, that the property had been stolen, and that being the case, anyone who was in there would be treated as a tenant, a temporary custodian of the place. Which is all he is. He may not know it yet, but the facts are the facts. And that's the beauty of standing under the truth, because, you see, we're back once again to the Mark Twain quote, a lie can be halfway around the world while the truth is still lacing up its boots. So nearly 5 years on from the first possession hearing, the first void order for possession, nearly 5 years on, the truth has not gone away. In fact, it's got fucking louder and louder. I may well have been one of the first to go into court and argue that the bank had loaned me, or could not demonstrate that it had loaned me any monies at all. I even went through the mechanics of fractional reserve banking in broad brushstrokes, so it was clear. You know, this was all in the affidavit as well. And on top of that, of course, there was no written contract, which is even required under statute, under the 1989 Law of Property Miscellaneous Provisions Act, Section 2. Any agreement for a mortgage, in other words, a contract, has to be signed by all parties. The representatives, the agents of the bank, and the mortgagor. What a huge, elaborate Ponzi-type scheme it is, the Great British Mortgage Swindle. But rest assured, as I told my friend Andrew earlier, you know, like many others, if someone's had me and tricked me, okay, I can think to myself, well, I can laugh, you know, because I think, well, fucking hell, you got me there. And it is quite funny. But that means I don't get tricked twice. It's basic psychology. And, you know, if I'm someone who operates that way, then you can rest assured, dear listener, there's millions of others that were similarly minded. And that, you see, is what makes things quite amusing right now. Because remedy will be found, remedy will be had. It's not going to come in one of the bogus statutory courts run by the Crown House of Rothschild. No, it's going to come from a grand jury. And it's also going to come from putting pressure on all those so-called professionals, insurance policies, because the evidence and the facts are clear. Every conveyancing solicitor who has not explained to his client just what the requirements are of the 1989 Law of Property Act, miscellaneous provisions, is liable for a claim of professional negligence. Put it this way, his role in the deal, in the scam, in the great British mortgage swindle, call it what you will, he's obviously suck you in for the bait and switch that's going on. The mortgagor is the de facto creditor of the bank. And yet, thanks to the duplicitous professional negligence of the conveyancing solicitor, this is where the switch comes in, he ends up leaving the deal as the debtor on a loan that, as a matter of account, in fact, never existed. It was all an extension of credit, and that's all it was. You see, the mortgage deed itself states on there that the mortgagor signs it in a lawful declaration under oath. He signs it stating that he is the beneficial owner of the house before he's even fucking moving in. Now, any true solicitor, I mean someone who's acting with due diligence and with sufficient understanding of what's going on, would ask you, look, I have to say, Joe, before you sign this mortgage deed, under oath, the penalty of perjury, are you the beneficial owner of the house? Because if you are, why do you need the credit extension? You see, and it's just these simple questions that help us to see exactly what's going on with the mortgage swindle. And would it not be unreasonable to expect that same conveyancing solicitor, if he was genuine and authentic in his advice, to say something along these lines? Look, before you sign anything, Joe, I've got to ask you, have you noticed how the bank, in all their documentation that you received, which includes the offer of a mortgage advance, I've never signed anything. That no officer at the bank has signed anything and had his signature witnessed. Now, I don't think they're going to sign the legally required mortgage contract. So, if I was you, speaking as your conveyancing solicitor, the one who you're paying money for good advice, the one who you're paying to ensure that it's all legal and above board, I've got to mention this to you. Are you sure you want to go ahead with it? Because from every angle I've looked at it, it's utterly fraudulent. The bank, or a bank's representative, must sign for the contract to be lawful. So if I were you, I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. Now, wouldn't that be reasonable? It's quite funny in a way. It's going to have to come to an end. This is just getting ridiculous. It's been getting ridiculous for, as far as the rogue mail's concerned, for the last 5 years. Absolute levels of insanity, depravity, and utter corruption that I've experienced. Most of it has been unveiled on the rogue mail website. You're listening to a roadcast from the heart of Dara, somewhere in the north of the British Isles. And if you're appreciating these roadcasts, and I'm hoping I won't have to make these requests or offers or whatever they are for much longer, if you're able to, though, right now, make a donation, and you feel that what I'm putting out merits that, and you'd like to help me out in whatever way, shape or form you can, then, you know, please feel free to get in touch and or make a donation. It'll be gratefully received. Now, no court in Britain is capable, even if its officers were willing to do so, is capable of determining the facts surrounding the great mortgage swindle. However, a grand jury of our peers, that means those who are sufficiently up to scratch with the information and have adequate knowledge to extrapolate just how the mortgage swindle takes place, a jury of such peers would be more than capable of making a determination of the facts. The bankers, the financiers, the accountants, whoever, will all be invited to take part and offer up their affidavits, their witness statements, and to answer the allegations against them. And the allegation is that their actions are those of genocidal pirates, bandits. Now, the accusation is one of genocide by way of fraud, and the criminal actions of the lying solicitors like Louise Power and Rebecca Courtney. I saw an associate had got a claim against the Bad Fume and Burgle. Bad Fume and Burgle are also known as the Bradford and Mingley. Now, he's got a notarised affidavit which states the facts as he sees them. And he made a claim in the court against the bank 2 weeks ago. The bank, through Shoesmiths, and it was either, I think it was Louise Power, but it may have been Rebecca Courtney, who signed a substantial witness statement. It ran to probably about 40 pages minimum of utter nonsense. Now, is she so mentally ill that she genuinely believes that a bank lends an individual its own monies? Or is she just such a whore that she'll do anything? She'll solicit and she'll solicit and she'll solicit until she gets a client for whom she'll do anything. Even commit perjury, because that's what she's done. I'm staggered, because, you know, this woman, if she's one who's employed by the bank, she's one, you know, these women were behind the 5:30 a.m. dawn swoop criminal eviction of a mother and son in Coventry. Again, the link's on the website. It's horrendous viewing. She put on her website, Rebecca Courtney, that she would achieve, it was her aim to achieve a result for her client by whatever means is necessary. She subsequently, since that article went up, I think it was in January that I posted the article, she subsequently amended the biography from which that quote was taken, which is on the company website. It's Walker Morris. Again, the link's on the links on Rogue Mail. It beggars belief. Is it mental illness? Is it psychopathy? Is it some kind of satanic mind trickery? Well, it's all mind trickery. Trickery, not chicory. That's something completely different. What a nest of vipers appears to be operating out of West Yorkshire, the land more correctly known as Dara, previously known as Elmet. I mean, fucking hell, it's parasitic. But it's not parasitic anymore, because the individuals are aware now of the parasite. and it's time for a purge. What's the purgative? What is the remedy for flushing out the parasite in this case? Well, the remedy or the solution is creation, the formation, the wonderful expression of the people's will, of a grand jury. A grand jury in which the banksters are tried with crimes of genocide. A genocide against the native indigenous peoples of these lands. And, you know, whether or not people believe that there's a genocide going on is of no consequence to me, because the truth will out, and the truth demonstrates that. You know, you think of the millions that were slaughtered in the two world wars. Genocide. The system does not like intelligent individuals who reveal its duplicitous nature and shine the light of the truth into these fucking lies and deceptions. No, 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 we can't have that, don't you know? No, no, it needs hammering down. We must put a stop to this. Keep the lid on it. And no, no way should this information be out there. Well, too late, sunshine. Too late. And if that isn't another reason for feeling light-hearted about all of this, then I'm a monkey's uncle. So, that, in a nutshell, is why we are organising a special Bankster Busters conference and world premiere of what is going to become something of a cult mainstream documentary. I'll say that deliberately because paradox is how things are. Many things are paradoxical. But we're going to be organising a world premiere screening of the documentary at a Bankster Busters conference, at which we'll watch the film together. Copies will be available for purchase. Some of the protagonists will even be there. If you want them to sign your edition, your first press of what is sure to become a classic, with the name The Great British Mortgage Swindler, then watch this space. Listen up, because we're going to be promoting it soon. That conference will also cover the various methods, the guerrilla tactics that can be deployed by anyone facing a claim by a bank. Templates will be provided, and yours truly will also be taking the attendees through a step-by-step expose of just how the mortgage swindle is perpetrated. In other words, I'm going to be lifting the curtain. That doesn't mean I've lifted all the curtains, by the way. Some of it is still veiled. But I'm going to be lifting the curtain on exactly what's going on when someone enters an iniquitous agreement and unlawful agreement for a mortgage on a property, remember, that is not theirs. I'm not talking about remortgages, by the way. So it's going to be quite a day, and I'd urge anyone who wants to pre-book a place to get to drop me a line. But we'll also be pumping it out through the social media, so please give it the thumbs up and share it as and where you see fit. In other words, spread the word. The word's out there anyway. And that's another thing I'd like to touch on, you know, the importance of the spoken word. You see, that article today ran to thousands of words, and it took a while to get out, but after you've written something like that, it becomes a synthesis. It's a natural process whereby, you know, you get to the point where you understand the information so clearly, with such clarity, but you're able to express it in bite-sized chunks. And like I say, things are lighter when you're dealing with the truth. I told Andrew earlier a little bit. I told him, and like I said, I provided him with a synthesis of what I've been going on over the last 5 years with regard to the Great British Mortgage Swindle. And, you know, we probably stood there talking for about half an hour, but I was able to synthesize it into a segment that he was able to, you know, instantly understand. I think most people do get it. The big scam is the banks don't lend you a fucking penny, and you enter into a kind of indentured slavery agreement with them. But they, of course, are not the real master. The real master, the real hand behind the various curtains, the hand in the gantry that's pulling the strings of the puppets, is anyone, effectively, who wants you dead, who's prepared to carry out acts of genocide against you. And that may be a financier, copper, a bailiff, an employee of the National Health Service. It's anyone who's engaging in acts that are going to cause you harm and loss and lead to your demise, and it, you know, and will have a cumulative effect of wiping you out, of wiping you and your fellows out. Genocide, that's what we're dealing with. And it doesn't get much clearer than that, does it? Problem, reaction, solution. Problem is the genocide of the indigenous peoples of Europe. The reaction is one of indignation and realization and empowerment, whereby the people research and discover the information for themselves. And the solution is the formation of a grand jury to provide justice that Her Majesty's Rothschild's courts and tribunal services have so woefully, disgracefully, and traitorously failed to provide. Oh dear, oh dear. Anyway, I'm aware that there's a bit of background noise here, so I'm going to wrap this up now. This has been another Roadcast. Thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure as always, and I look forward to catching up with you. Catching up with you on the other side, as they say. Keep smiling, and whatever you do, don't let the bastards grind you down, because that's what they want. Get here to get lighter. Have a laugh at it all. Become enlightened. And on that epically cheerful note, I wish you a fond farewell and say goodnight. Cheers.